One of the things that I'd like to acknowledge is a man named David, who is a priest in Toronto, Canada, that I used to go to confession to. And I used to think I was just the rottenest of the rotten because I was in this seminary. And, you know, I remember a guy that was a friend of mine telling me about his rotten past. And his rotten past consisted of skipping church once every 6 months. Now, I was in whorehouses at 13. So that was a real contrast to my life. And I used to think that I was so bad off. I was into a lot of compulsive sexuality. And they told us we couldn't be doing that if we were going to be ordained priests. And I'd have to find a different priest every morning to go to confession to. I'd long since gotten over worrying about being blind. It's lonely being celibate for 10 years, folks. I hope God has chalked that up for me. But anyway, it was a very painful time in my life, and I always felt so horrible. And Father David, I'd go to confession, and he would say, I would want him to give me the stations of the cross and, you know, penitence to kneel, and, you know, out of my shame, I needed to be punished. And he would say things like, you're one of the most beautiful people I've ever known, and I heard you talking to the class the other day, and you're going to be a great speaker, and someday you're going to find yourself in your power. And it just would drive me crazy. And I remember one morning waking up under my car on Sage Road in Houston, Texas, about 9 o'clock in the morning. Now, you know, this is not what a lot of the neighborhood folks did. And I remember laying there looking up at, you know, the inner workings of the motor. And I never heard any of the voices of the people that told me what I should do, what I ought to do, what I must do, or how screwed up I was. But I'd hear Father David's voice. I would just hear this voice. And it was always, I mean, I couldn't talk about this 5 years ago. It was so emotional. It was that healing voice of this person that loved me unconditionally. And later on, there was Francis, the guy that was my sponsor, who just put up with my slips and just loved me unconditionally. There's my wife, who's loved me unconditionally, who stood by me through my insanity, not my drinking insanity, my codependent insanity, my compulsivity, my acting out. My daughter, who just loves me, my stepdaughter, who just loves me so much, my therapist, you know, who's the person that's looked at me and told me things nobody's ever told me, confrontive things that I needed to hear. And it takes an act of love to do that, for somebody to do that. So I celebrate them tonight, and I hope you have people you celebrate tonight who are like that, who have turned to you, who are the reasons, who loved you, who really loved you. And that's something to celebrate, that we had that mirroring, that face that was there. Because our life is about broken relationships. My addictions were about relationships, pathological relationships. I was in love with two and all. I had a romance, an intimacy. I had an intimacy with nicotine. I mean, those were my best friends until they broke down. So learning to have relationships is the most important thing, and that's what we're celebrating. The power of the personal is the power of relationships. And then the third thing, and I'll just introduce this and we can take a break, is the power of what Bobby talked about earlier, the child, celebrating this child. See, it's a strange phenomena that by being an adult child, I've learned that there was a hole in my soul, that there was a little child in me that had never gotten his needs met, and that a child's needs are absolutely insatiable. Children need their parents all the time. A child needs their parents for at least 15 years. Now, at 15, they puberty on you and then your history. I have an 18-year-old that holds a crucifix up when I come in the room. And the kid won't talk to me except in monosyllables. But I hope that's normal adolescent transition. I'll let you know in about 10 years. But anyway, I mean, a child needs the parent. So by embracing that child in me and by coming to understand this wounded child in me, it's led me to embrace what Wayne Kreutzberg calls the magical child, what Carl Jung called the wonder child, what has been witnessed to through countless generations in all the great Greek myths, in all the great stories about the heroes, the child in exile, the child that's in exile. What was celebrated in one of the most successful motion pictures we've ever known, E.T., the extraterrestrial, a child that was abandoned, who found his way back, was led back by a child. See, we began to understand something of the power of the child. The Zen masters talk about the beginner's mind. Mencius said, a man has not achieved virtue until he's become like a child. Lao Tse said that greatness is being childlike. Jesus said there's no kingdom without becoming like a child. So we begin to understand that children have often had non-ordinary powers. Black Elk and Yogananda both had great, powerful experiences of healing as children. My friend Jack Swartz in Oregon, the man that put the 18-inch needles through his veins that they have on film at Menninger, in a film called The Yoga of East and West. Jack can keep his brain waves in theta while he sticks the needle in there and pulls it out and heals the wound. Jack was having extraordinary kind of powers of laying on hands and healing as a child. Olga Warrell, the great mystic in Baltimore that was called into Menninger's time after time because of her clairvoyant ability to diagnose cases that the doctors were befuddled by, was healing. She healed her mother as a child. Those non-ordinary, powerful abilities that Joseph Chilton Pierce celebrated in the book, The Magical Child, where he showed us that these Balinese girls that walk on coals, that children have these extraordinary, non-ordinary abilities. So that as an adult child, as I learn to embrace the child and let the child lead me, I can learn to grow into the acceptance of this magical wonder child, the part of me that's the most creative, the most godlike, the most spontaneous, the most powerful part of my whole being. I want to read you Alice Miller. Unless it blew away. Did something just blow away? Oh. Gosh. I want to read you Alice Miller in Pictures from Childhood. She says, probably I too would have remained trapped by the compulsion to protect my parents. Now, you know, we've talked about that, how we idealize parents and we can't not do it. We can't not do it. I couldn't have at 4 called a meeting with my little bags packed and said, oh man, you're an alcoholic. Mom, you're a raving codependent. I'm moving down to the Farquhars. See, what I had to do was to make them okay and me bad in order to survive. If any of you have seen the film we did in Los Angeles called It's Not My Problem on codependency, there's a scene where a black girl is holding her baby and she's talking about her cocaine-addicted husband. And at a certain point, she cracks, and this child can't be more than 8 months old. That baby turns around to start taking care of her. That child will immediately start taking care of the parent because of survival needs. Not out of altruism, but because of survival needs. So Alice Miller writes, I would have been trapped in the compulsion to protect my parents. And because it's so all-pervasive, would not have even recognized it as such had I not come in contact with the child within me. She appeared late in my life wanting to tell me her secret. She approached me very hesitantly, speaking to me in an inarticulate way, but she took me by the hand and led me into territory I had been avoiding all my life because it frightened me. Yet I had to go there. I could not keep on turning my back, for it was my territory, my very own. It was the place I had attempted to forget so many years ago, the same place where I had abandoned the child that I once was. There she had to stay, alone with her knowledge, waiting until someone would come at last to listen to her and to believe her. Now I was standing at an open door, ill-prepared, filled with all an adult's fear of the darkness and the menace of the past, but I could not bring myself to close the door and leave that child alone again until my death. Instead, I made a decision that was to change my life completely and profoundly. I made a decision to let this child lead me, to put my trust in this nearly autistic being who had survived the isolation of decades. Now, man, is that a powerful statement of embracing this wounded child within us and going with that child. Some of you have done the workshops that we do, or other workshops, and there's all kinds of people that are doing this work. I'm reading a manuscript now by John and Laura Weiss on the inner child. It's never too late to have a happy childhood. That book will be out soon. I hope you'll look at it. I hope you'll get that book. It's a beautiful working through of these inner child issues. Charlie Whitfield's book on the inner child, or Wakefield, excuse me. It's Whitfield. And it's a beautiful book. And there's all kinds of things available. But it's so important for us to be able to touch that child within us. And then to realize it's not just getting to that wounded child, but that as we embrace that child and integrate that child into our life, that magical wonder child begins to appear. And kinds of powers that we've never been aware of begin to come to us. It's like the wounded child represents the ego, but the magical child represents a higher kind of self. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to take a break here for about 15 minutes. I want to call Winston out here because he needed to say something. I want to take about a 15-minute break. And when we come back, I want to take you through a couple of kinds of experiences of touching that wounded child, celebrating the wounded child, and then moving on to this magical child and the power of this magical child in your life. So Winston, you need to come out here, and I'll see you in 15 minutes. Hey, folks, if y'all can kind of wend your way back. If you all can find your seats, I'd like to go ahead and continue now. One of the ways to describe the journey from finding the inner child, the wounded inner child, to the magical child is to describe it as the movement from victimization to empowerment. And while I have spent a great deal of time in the last 2 years talking about victimization and really offering people what Jane Middleton Moss and Laurie Dwinnell call legitimizing our pain. Children of trauma, children from dysfunctional families, are children of unresolved grief. We never had enough time to grieve. Nobody legitimized our pain. There was no support in grieving. There was no modeling of emotions to know how to express the emotions. So for so many of us, part of our journey back is to do the original pain work, which is to do that early grief work. And in order to do it, we have to have our abuse legitimized. Now, in the 12-step groups, there's often a reaction to that. You know, Bobby was talking earlier to me about going a place where they had a sign, we weren't victims, we were volunteers. See, I absolutely don't believe that. We were victims, and there was a victimization, and it's not about blaming people. I keep using the metaphor. It's like my mom and dad were driving out of the driveway and they ran over my leg. See, it's not, they didn't intend to, but I've been limping for 32 years. And so it's important to know what happened to you. It's important to know what happened to you. It's important to cry out. It's important to express the pain around that hurt. So in the healing process, we've got to acknowledge the abuse. Make the abuse real. Fritz Perls says, nothing changes until it becomes what it is. Nothing changes until it becomes real. So as long as we stay in delusion and denial and idealization, we can't heal the pain. We've got to accept and have our pain legitimized. Then we can express the feelings. You can't heal what you can't feel. So you've got to have the ability to legitimize the pain, to express the feelings, to go through the grief work, and to do the healing process. Now, the grief work involves shock, denial, depression, anger work, sadness, loneliness. It involves a lot of pain, that legitimate suffering that Carl Jung talks about, that all neurosis is a substitute for legitimate suffering. We just don't want to do it. And so there's a point in the process that we've got to accept the victimization. Now, there's also a point where it's worth giving it up and moving on. When I've done the pain, when I've done the original pain work, when I've worked on my inner child and gotten in touch with that wounded inner self and that inner child, then it's important for me to begin to embrace that child and move on toward empowerment. To consciously choose to break the multi-generational patterns, to consciously choose to leave those family systems, to work through the forgiveness, to say goodbye, to find our own self, to build our own boundaries, and then for many of us to go back and to love those people. But sometimes you can't go back until you've gotten out. At least I couldn't. And for some people, they may not be able to go back. Renee Fredrickson said, you know, if she could give her clients two gifts, she'd give them the courage to quit trying to change their families, you know, fix the family. I'm sure you, like me, have sent the brothers and sister many books and plane covers. You know, we have all this survivor's guilt. You know, we were all on this raft going down and we're surviving, you see, and you feel guilty. That's part of the family dysfunction. And so we want to save them. We want to go back and get the brothers and sisters. And sometimes you just can't. And the other gift she said she would give her clients is the courage to leave their families to their fate, which seems so harsh. When you come out of those strong kinds of families and those clinging, incestuous families, emotionally clinging families. But sometimes, where you're still getting abused, that may be what you have to do. And thank God that we have support groups, that we have a family of choice and a family of affiliation we can go to. And that's why we need a family of choice and a family of affiliation. Because, man, are these systems powerful. The loyalty issues in these systems are enormous. We poor therapists go up against these families. Man, we need co-therapists and group therapists to deal with them sometimes. Because they're powerful, powerful systems. So the healing process is to embrace that wounded child, to do the grief work. That's what we're going to be doing in the workshop tomorrow. It's grief work and corrective experiences. then we move on. The boundary building is a way to begin the empowerment process, to begin to have my own boundaries, to know who I am, to build an inner life, to start having an inner life. See, no shame-based codependent has an inner life. To be shame-based is to have no inner life, is to be self-ruptured. As a shame-based person, I was an object of contempt to myself. Once my shame was internalized, I was no longer in me. I was standing there looking at me all the time in judgment. See, so there's no inner unity. There's no inner life. And that's spiritual bankruptcy. So the healing process, as the 12 steps point out so beautifully, that once you've done, once you've moved into healthy shame, then you move to healthy guilt, you make amends, then you move into empowerment, spiritual awakening. We sought through prayer and meditation to increase our conscious contact, to have an inner life. And so it's real important that we touch this magical child within us, that we begin to find our true self is what the magical child is, our bliss, our divine imprint, if you will. But our bliss. See, Joseph Campbell is doing some stuff on PBS, and I heard him the other night, and he was talking about Sinclair Lewis's novel, Babbitt. The last line of that novel, a man says, "I have never done anything in my life that I wanted to." And evidently there was a scene where a little boy didn't want to eat his peas or something, and the mother said, "Okay," and the father got furious. And the father said, the mother said, "Leave him alone. He doesn't want to eat his peas." And the father said, "Well, he can't go through life doing what he doesn't want to do. I've never done anything in my life that I wanted to." I mean, think of that. To never go through your life and never do anything you wanted to do. See, what the child is that part of us that's really in touch with our feelings, that's really in touch with our desires. Desire. You go through the Bible, they were people of desire. Kierkegaard said, "Let others speak of wickedness. I want to go back to those Old Testament figures. They loved, they hated, they killed, they murdered. They were people of desire." Sound like Jimmy Swaggart. I got carried away there, folks. But that idea that there was energy there and they really lived life while they had it. And see, that's what a child is, that part of us that's spontaneous. They just watch little children. They're just wonderful. Bobby's talking about how that baby knows how in degrees to ask for what she wants. I remember my wife and I getting ready to go out, and my son said, "Who's going to take care of me?" Boy, I mean, he's in there. Let's get this straight right now. Who is going to take care of me? And that's beautiful to watch children take care of themselves and know how to take care of themselves. So part of what we're moving toward and we're celebrating is that recovery isn't worth it unless we're moving on to bliss, that we're seeking out our happiness, we're seeking out our own personal power, that when I die, I will know something of who I am. What I do is me, for that I came, the poet says. I came into this world to be me. What's the difference that makes the difference? See, that's the most important thing, this wonderful quotation of Michener, where he says, "For this is the journey that men make to find themselves. If they fail in this, it doesn't matter what else they find." At the end of the ride, they are tossed into a bin marked failure. "But if a man happens to find himself, and a woman finds herself, I'll add, if she or he knows what they can be depended on to do, that's a boundary. The limits of their courage, another boundary. The degree to which you can surrender his inner life to some woman or some man. His honest and unpostured goals, the depth of his or her feelings for beauty, for truth, the extent of their dedication. Then he has found a mansion which he can inhabit with dignity all the days of his life." That's what we're going for in the magical child. Now, what I'd like to do is I'd like to do another meditation with you. And this time, just a kind of a simple thing to ask you to take a moment or two, and this is a sort of a way, I want to show you how this magical child has been operating in your life. You know, that this child is already there in your life, even though hidden. Wayne Kritzberg talks about the magical child as the part of you that could giggle in church, even though you had a dysfunctional family. You know, and that's a part of you that could get out in the playground and laugh with your friends and somehow could get excited about bubble gum and you know, baseball cards or whatever. It's a part of us that has some kind of hope, that even when we're alone, that flicker of hope will come. So just take a minute now. I want you to take a minute, and if you feel comfortable doing it, close your eyes. If not, you can peek periodically. Time I do this, or somebody will go, you know, and then they look around. Just let yourself relax like we did before. Just for a minute, listen to the music. Shelley said, there's music in all things if men had ears. The conversation of the universe, how things are saying themselves to us if we'll only listen. And you are the music while the music lasts. Imagine you're being carried away now on a journey back into your life, like you're looking back, and just look back to a time in your life when you felt good about yourself, an example of when you felt fulfilled or happy or at peace with yourself. It may have been just for an hour, or just for a night, or just for a day, or just for a moment. Just let yourself go back to that memory. You felt at peace. You felt good about yourself. In that moment, you felt happy. Just really let yourself go into that memory, like you're looking out of your own eyes. You can hear what's going on around you. You can look down and see your own clothes. Who's there with you, if anybody? Just let yourself go through that experience, feeling good about yourself, of feeling happy, of feeling a moment or a day or an hour of inner peace. Thank you.
drift out of that memory to another time. Let your mind, let your deep unconscious find this for you. It doesn't have to be dramatic. Just a moment where you were at peace with yourself. You felt good. Maybe you were alone. Maybe you were with someone. Maybe it was a performance. Maybe it happened in school or at home or at work or with a friend. Just go into another memory of that. Let yourself hear what's going on or feel what was going on. And then if you can, drift to another memory of inner peace. Again, it doesn't have to be dramatic. Looking at a child, your own child, holding your child. Daddy, I love you. Mama, I love you. Embrace of a lover. Someone smiling at you. You doing an unselfish act that no one knew about. Go into that experience. And then just begin to let all the memories drift away. Just very slowly let the couple of memories or the three memories, or maybe you had more, maybe you had less. It's okay. Just let it begin to drift away. And like out on a black horizon, what words come to you to describe that? How would you describe that? What's a word that seems appropriate for those two experiences or those three? Or what's a word that seems appropriate for one and another word for another? And another word for another. Or a phrase that describes it. Imagine that you're saying those words. You're saying that phrase. I felt one with the people I was with. I felt joyous. I felt good about myself. I felt rapture. I felt spontaneous. I felt an inner peace, a quiet joy. I felt like I loved everyone. Like there was no separation between me and someone else. Hear those words in your mind's ear. Hear the words. Thank you. And then as you hear those words, begin to see a child appear. In your mind's eye, see a child appear that's beautiful, like a kingly child or a queenly child, or a child that's decked out magically. Just let it come to you out of your own deep, rich imagination. Let that kingly child, that queenly child come forth. Beautiful, magnificent, perfect, innocent. And hear them saying those words to you. The experience of oneness, the experience of silence, of depth. It was profound. I felt at one with all things. Hear the words of that child. Just feel yourself surrounded by light, like warm sunlight. And let yourself embrace that magical child. Take that child into your heart. Hear those words, that those are the words of your magical child. Those are the words of your higher self. That when you heard those words, you heard your higher self talking to you. That those are real experiences of your own real life. And that whenever you want to re-experience this magical child, you can close your eyes. You can go back into those experiences where you felt at peace or happy or you felt joyous. And you can hear those words and hear the words of your higher self. You can re-experience your magical child, higher self, by just closing your eyes and going back to those experiences. And if you like that experience, just right now, make the decision that you're going to create more experiences like that in your life. That you're going to take care of this self, this higher self, that goes for truth and beauty and goodness and unity. Enormous creative power to heal. And realize that that's you, that's the inner self of you. And do you want that in your life? And you can make a decision to love yourself unconditionally, this self. And I encourage you to make that decision right now. I choose to love myself unconditionally, this higher self that goes for truth and beauty and goodness and caring for others and peace and happiness and joy and laughter and spontaneity. I call you to the highest that's in you. To embrace the highest that's in you. Your God-likeness. Thank you. here in this moment, in this time, right now, you can experience that. And know that that's you. That there's never been anyone else like you. And that there never will be again. Celebrate that. Embrace that you have this higher self, this magical, beautiful self within you. And anytime you want to experience it, you can go back. You can go back into this place, to these memories. And the more you experience it, the more you'll thirst after it and hunger for it. Bliss has no opposite. It has no opposite. Once we've tasted it, we want more. Now just take a deep breath. And just let yourself go to some beautiful place. Maybe it's this place. A mountain place. A place where there's a lake or an ocean, a beach, or a meadow. Just let yourself be there now. Just feel yourself welcome to the earth, that you belong here, just as much as these rocks, these mountains, the meadows, the lakes, the oceans belong and are beautiful, so do you belong, and you're beautiful. Just imagine you could look back on your life and see it all up to now as necessary from this higher point of view. That I couldn't be standing here tonight without my alcoholic father. That this movement that's going on and healing people all over this country is due to you. And to me, and all of us who are willing to come out of hiding. And somehow, from a higher point of view, we can begin to see it as perfect. Maybe not right now, but as you probe this magical child, can begin to see a symbol of your life, its purpose, its meaning, and that you came here. And that you're important. Now just very slowly, wherever you are, look up and see those clouds again. See the clouds form the number 4. Pink, white, purple clouds. Just know that you'll remember this contact with your magical child. This higher self, that you'll remember this, that it'll amaze you, it'll surprise you when you least expect it in the weeks to come. You'll be reading the paper, driving your car, at a break at work, drinking coffee, drinking milk, eating your dinner, going to sleep at night, getting up in the morning, getting the newspaper. You'll remember this magical child, this higher self. Just let yourself record that. Now see the number 3, and then the number 2. Just feel your feet and your legs and your arms and your hands, and just let yourself come back now. To your normal waking consciousness. And just very slowly now, see the number 1 and open your eyes. And just be here. This magnificent place. Just let yourself be here. yourself be situated here and now in this space and time. And just for a couple of minutes, share that with your neighbor. Just share that experience. Just for 2 minutes each, share that with a neighbor. Amid the rain. Maybe when you're going home tonight, if you can keep talking about that as you hear those words, as you make those phrases about those experiences, those are the experiences to me of my higher self, of my magical child. And as a codependent, you see, because I've never been in my inner space, I never even knew that was there, even though I had had the experiences. But that child, that powerful part of you, has been there all along. And so it's like the poetry in your soul. Remember, Robert Frost said, poetry is saying something I didn't know I knew. It's like it's there. It's there in that depth of ourselves. Every one of you is a creative artist. You dream every night. When I do dream workshops sometimes, it's unbelievable to me. The works of art that come out of everybody in there. No dream is alike. And those are the products of our own deep unconscious and our own deep self. So I really encourage you to believe, you know, and this is what's so hard for us from dysfunctional families, to believe that we have this kind of power. Jesus. Am I getting this wrong, Lord? I thought you were with me. Maybe the higher power is trying to tell me something here, folks. What I'd like to say to you, and I think that maybe if we get out of here in the next 5 or 10 minutes, we'll be getting out just in time. What I'd like to say to you is that this inner self, this inner peace, is to me the goal of the healing of my codependency. It's the rich inner life, that spiritual awakening. The steps, two old drunks years ago figured this out, that you haven't been healed until you've had a spiritual awakening. And that's what I'm going for in my life, and that's what I'm celebrating tonight, that we all have that power within us. Out of that beingness comes new action and new doing. See, all my life, I tried to heal my shame by doing, and it never worked. I could never heal my being by my doing. You've got to heal your being first, and then your doing comes. And I think out of that inner state comes great acts and great events. Oscar Wilde once said, "This is the true purpose of life, to live for a purpose recognized by yourself to be a mighty cause. To be a force of nature rather than a feverish little clod of grievances and ailments, dedicated to the proposition that life owes you something."
Say, I want that empowerment. I want to live realizing that life is its own splendid justification. I want to live realizing that I want to be used up when I die. That the harder I work, the more I live. I don't believe that life is a flickering candle. I believe that it's a splendid torch, and I want to light it and make it burn brightly before I hand it on to my sons and daughter and to future generations. And I call you to that tonight. God bless you all.